If you're tuning into this podcast, I'm going to guess that you really like learning about nutrition, but you also might be overwhelmed with all the information out there because this is just one of hundreds, if not thousands of podcasts about health and nutrition and hormones. If you're on social media, you know that every single day you're getting bombarded with different tips and recipes and different forms of information about what is good for our hormones and what's not good for our hormones. And I know so many of the people who reach out to me tell me they're just feeling so overwhelmed with where to start and they don't know who to trust. They don't know where to begin. They want to be eating healthier. They want to be feeling better. They want to regulate their cycles, take charge of their PCOS, get rid of bloating, all the things, but they just don't know what's actually going to work for them. And I'll tell you, it's really hard to find the answers on social media because what actually works for balancing your hormones is not something that you can fit into a reel. It's not something that you could fit into a little Instagram post. It's not even really something you can completely get into in this format through a podcast, at least in my opinion. And that's why I want to just remind you, these are the last couple of days that you can sign up for Balance Your Hormones 101, which is really where there's no fluff. We get into it. I teach you exactly how to actually balance your hormones from A to Z, everything that you need to know in terms of blood sugar balance, gut health, reducing inflammation, making sure that all the hormones that govern your cycle are in balance with one another, really helping you understand what's going on there to figure out what it is that you need to balance your hormones and the practical steps to get there with confidence. One of the things that I hear over and over again from literally hundreds of women who have taken this course is how confident they feel after the course, just in terms of knowing what to do. I know what works for me now. I know what to put on my plate. I know how to make choices every single day that actually helps my body feel better, function better, and feel like I have control of my hormones and my health. And I'm going to remind you, May 4th is the last day to sign up. So that's in, I think, 5 or 6 days. You've got just a couple of more days to sign up and grab the bonuses, which includes live coaching sessions with me. So every Sunday we're meeting on Zoom. Our first one is this coming Sunday on May 4th, if you're listening in real time. And that's where you can show up and ask me literally any question that you have about nutrition, health, hormones, something you heard on TikTok and you want to know if there's any scientific validity behind it. I love hearing the questions. It's always so interesting for me to see what's on people's minds. And it is the last time that I'm going to be doing this for quite some time because I'm going on maternity leave starting in the beginning of June and won't be running this course for the rest of 2025. So if you want to join, now is the time. Make sure that you also get the podcast listeners discount. The only discount code that I have for anyone joining this round is my podcast listeners because I love you guys and I really appreciate you supporting the show. You can use the code podcast10 and save 10% off the course. So can't wait to see you there. Would love to see you there. And now I want to tell you a little bit about today's episode. My guest today is Meg Langston. And even though we talk all the time on this podcast about regulating your period, about optimizing your fertility, there is so much new information in this episode, which is really what I always try to do when I bring on different guests to talk about similar topics. I love when they have a new angle or a lot more to add to the conversation that we haven't had on the show before. And this episode really hits the nail on the head in terms of bringing so much more to the conversation, things that you might not have heard about before, things that you might not have thought about. So I'll tell you a little bit about Meg first. Meg Langston is a functional nutrition therapist. Her passion for using lifestyle and nutrition to support healthy hormones and normal digestion was birthed out of her personal battle with overcoming regular cycles, learning why diet and hustle culture hinder your health and what a powerful tool every woman's menstrual cycle is. She and her team specialize in helping women address the root cause of hormones and digestion, and she believes you should and can feel good all month long. Meg runs a virtual private practice with a team of practitioners dedicated to supporting busy women, getting answers, and feeling empowered and bringing back the joy in health. And in this episode, you'll hear Meg share a little bit about her own journey with irregular periods and recovering her period as an athlete. We talk a lot about the role of iron in our hormone health and the issues with iron absorption, why we need to look beyond the standard blood tests that just show how much iron you have floating around in your blood, why she doesn't recommend starting with supplementing vitamin D, even if you have low vitamin D, for irregular periods or fertility, how we can simplify our health with practical and actionable tips and not focus on the nitty gritty or the health trends. She also shares about her own experience with miscarriage and healing through miscarriage, especially as a practitioner working in the health and fertility space. I thought this was so important, so valuable, so vulnerable of her to share her own experience, you know, teaching women all about how to optimize their fertility and then privately also dealing with recurrent miscarriage and the way that she worked through that on both an emotional level, but also in terms of her health and on a physical level. And she really just is one of these people that it's such a pleasure to interview, to have on the mic, because she really has so much to share, so much wisdom. And I know that you guys are just going to love this episode. So without further ado, let's learn from Meg. Welcome to the About Health and Hormones podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Allen, a recovered sugar addict turned certified nutrition coach on a mission to help women learn how to balance their hormones and optimize their fertility. On this podcast, we have conversations with experts about all things health, hormones, wellness, nutrition, and more to give you the information, tips, and tricks you need to take control of your health and feel amazing in your body. I am so happy that you're here and I can't wait to dive in. Hello, Meg. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited to have you and share your wisdom with my audience. And I would love, before we get into everything, if you could just tell our audience a little bit about yourself, who you are, how you got here to be helping women with their hormones and helping them repair their periods.
Yeah. You know, to make a long story short, I mean, most of, I think, the practitioners that get into this space are from their own journey. And so mine is no different. I grew up pretty much playing competitive soccer my whole life since I was about 4 years old. And during, you know, the time, I always ate like an athlete, felt like an athlete. And then I decided to go to school and college and not play soccer. And during that time, I was just trying to figure out, you know, like, I'm not really an athlete. What does health mean? Am I really still carb loading? Like, well, do we have to eat a lot of pasta before I go to school? Like, it was just all different to me because I only thought of myself as an athlete. And so to kind of redefine health was really a difficult thing for me. And this is going to really show my age. But back in the day, we didn't have Instagram. And so what we did was we looked at like magazines and we, you know, looked at, you know, I mean, honestly, different books like cookbooks that gave us really what, at least to me, defined health, which was aesthetics. It was like a female that had abs or she was in a bikini, she was holding a plate. And I was like, oh, okay. So to be healthy is to be fit. And so this took me on a long journey of eating disorder and disordered eating habits, which I always say is very separate because one was actually bulimia and then the other one was like, oh, I'm afraid to eat carrots. And it felt very different for me. And then it was a lot of just trying to figure out how much do I exercise? And you know, it was just so completely discombobulated of like what actually health was because I was pursuing aesthetics. And it wasn't until I was trying to, I've done so many sports. I've done marathons and triathlons and bodybuilding and CrossFit. And at one point I was doing Olympic lifting and I was trying to, you know, you lift really heavy weights, you want to weigh less because that's what puts you in a more competitive advantage. And so I was trying to make sure that I was lifting really heavy, staying really little, and I couldn't lose any more weight. And I was looking and I was trying to figure all this out. And I'm like, gosh, this is so crazy. Like, why can't I lose weight? I wasn't any, you know, really tiny. I had been healed from my eating disorder for many, many, many years. This is fast forwarding a ton. And I was learning eventually about your weight and your period. And I was like, huh, dove a little bit more into understanding my period. And then I was like, wait a second, I haven't really had my period in a while. It's kind of been irregular. And the more knowledge I became about trying to understand my period, like, oh my gosh, wait, that discharge is called cervical mucus. It has purpose. Oh my gosh, my basal body temperatures mean something. Wait a second, ovulation is like a thing more than just having a baby. Like my mind just went crazy. And I actually realized, like, oh my gosh, like there's a lot of things that are not healthy about me that I'm learning based on my period. Like that's where it all started. And so went to the conventional route, even went the functional route. When I went to the conventional route, there was birth control. It was like, hey, if you're anxious, get on, you know, antidepressants or anti-anxiety. And then functional was no different. It was like, yeah, great. We'll look at you from a root cause perspective. And all it was like test and supplement. And so I knew, yes, I want to make this my career, but I want to dive into people's nutrition and I want to look at their body holistically, including lifestyle, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, today. And not just utilize these functional testing for sure, because they're awesome, but not just stop there where we're really actually looking at the body, like how stressed are you? Are you eating enough? Are you getting outside? All the boring stuff we're trying to make sexy again. And so wound up making that my career, really diving deep. It's been a decade almost into this health and fitness industry. And I've been serving women all over the U.S. and I run a practice. We have a team of women that are practitioners underneath me. I run a group program. Have a couple different business adventures that I'm now starting up to support women as well. So that's me. Oh, and I'm a mom. My husband's a firefighter, so I'm a firefighter wife.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
It is. I never knew anything about firefighters before I was married to one, but they are actually, they're crazy. They're exceptional. The things that they have to know. My husband's also like the highest medic on scene. I'm like, gosh, they're like, how are they not getting paid like doctors? Because they're unreal. Like the things that they know and see and have to do.
That's amazing. I mean, your whole story is amazing, but even just the firefighter piece, it's funny. Like I have a lot of kids' books about firefighters, because like I told you, I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, and they look at firefighters as heroes. You kind of grow up and almost they become like these background characters that you don't necessarily see in the same way. But I'm sure also that means
he has never saved a cat from a tree, though, sadly. So I don't know what those books are lying about, but that guy's never done it. So but we talk to little boys, a 6-year-old and a and it's the coolest thing in the world that daddy gets to take him on the fire truck, and I don't know if I'm really allowed to say this, but that, you know, gets them to drive around with the sirens on. So that's the coolest in their realm.
That's incredible. That's amazing. Wow. So I love that. And I totally hear you. I think a lot of people in this space really, you know, took their own journey feeling frustrated or had that experience of like, oh my gosh, I didn't know all this about my body. And I want to share this sort of information and education with women. And I know you work with a lot of women who are struggling with all sorts of weird, funky symptoms going on around their periods. And I do want to talk about how to help with that. But before we even get there, can we start by just talking about like, what are we aiming for? What are we looking for when it comes to a healthy period, a healthy cycle? Or are there any red flags that kind of indicate that something's off with your hormones and off with your cycle?
Yeah. So I'm going to go through like a brief, like, basic of like what a period is and like an entire cycle. So I like to, there's many different ways. I also did FEM, which is fertility awareness method, basically, just to make sure, you know, in the practice that I'm speaking, I'm fully equipped on doing that. So if you're FEM certified, you'll go, oh, Meg, like, why are you making it more simple? So for those that are anybody that's FEM certified, I'm sorry for oversimplifying it, but I like to break it up this way. It's that you have your period and then you bleed the next time, right? So we have two different phases, I would say. So you have your period to ovulation, ovulation splits it, and then you have post-ovulation to your next period bleed. There's a couple different ways you can do pre-ovulatory, all that, but we're going to make it simple. So we're just going to go two phases and it's split by ovulation. So the first half is your follicular phase, first half follicular. And during this half, this is from your period bleed until ovulation. And when people have like longer cycles, this is typically where we're seeing like the follicular phase. It's delayed ovulation. So it's actually coming from this follicular phase, the first half of your cycle. But your period should come and go. And it should be anywhere, in my opinion, from 4 to 7 days. When I typically see it under 4 days, it's a sign of dysregulation, which we can dive deeper into. But you want to bleed anywhere from 35 to 80 milliliters. If you are taking your basal body temperature this time, so an oral temp, you want your oral temp to be around 97.6. If you're not taking an oral thermometer, I will say it doesn't matter. Just it only matters for thyroid health and the fact of like you spike, and we'll go through that in a second. But if you're like, why are you talking about temps? Should I be worried about temps? Back in the day, endocrinologists used to use oral temps to be able to decipher whether somebody was hypothyroid or not. So they would use an oral thermometer in order to indicate that. And so if you want to check in on thyroid health, it's really cool. You can use an oral thermometer and not only check in where you are in your cycle, because post-ovulation, it's going to spike, but also you can see, oh, in my follicular phase, I'm around 97.6. I've got a good basal body temperature, which probably means my thyroid's working pretty optimally. But so you're in your follicular phase, the first half, you have your period 4 to 7 days, and then you want to have some dry days. You really want to, go from period to no cervical mucus, and then you'll start to see cervical mucus increase or discharge. And that's important to have that point of change. So you want to have period bleed, dry day, cervical mucus. And the reason why, most people don't talk about this, but you actually do have progesterone in your follicular phase. We know about it oftentimes in the last half, the luteal phase, because that's what makes a baby and that's what raises temperature. But you actually need adequate amount of progesterone in this follicular phase, because progesterone, it will produce something called G mucus, which basically plugs up the cervix. So these dry days are really important. You'll see some people that are unhealthy. They'll have a period bleed. They'll start to have cervical mucus and then ovulate right away. And it's actually an indication that they do not have enough progesterone. So when you're worried about like fertility issues or thyroid issues, or you're just like, gosh, why am I anxious all the time? Or why is my cycle so short? Why do I feel like I'm always bleeding? It's actually can go back to not having enough progesterone, period, but also in that you can see it right away in that first half by going, not having any dry days, from going your period bleed to right into cervical mucus. So we want to make sure we're having our period bleed 4 to 7 days, you have some dry days, and then you start to notice cervical mucus. And I always make the same joke, like it's because it's so true. I had a couple over for dinner one time, and my friend's husband, not even my husband, was like, Meg, we're going to have a new couple over. Can you not talk about cervical mucus? And I was like, I will talk about cervical mucus. I absolutely will, because she probably needs to know about it. And also, great job, though, for calling it the right thing and not calling it discharge. Like, good for you. It is cervical mucus. But it's because I am so passionate about cervical mucus and the patterns of it. And this is why, is it's because actually it's indicative of a couple different things. One, it does make us a little more superior than men because of this, if I'm being honest. We can't get pregnant without it. We need cervical mucus to capture sperm. We feed sperm in the cervical mucus and then take it where it needs to go. So we quite literally keep cervical mucus alive. And then also it has amazing jobs like clearing the vaginal microbiome and keeping it and cleansing it. So cervical mucus is absolutely a part of your health. It is not a sign of anything weird. It is crucial. And it's different than like excitement, where we are aroused and we have any wetness down there. It's kind of like a creamy, sticky, when it's very low estrogenic, EL mucus, very low estrogenic. You'll notice it in your underwear. It kind of looks lotiony. And then it becomes very high estrogen, because the higher estrogen goes, it causes an LH surge, which says, boop, let's ovulate. And it tells, the egg to drop. So as estrogen goes high, it becomes super slippery and lubricative. And that's where you notice the egg white mucus. And where you're sitting down, you're having a bowel movement, maybe you wipe and it's whoop, you just go white through. That's actually a great sign of really healthy fertility. And it means that you're approaching ovulation right where that splits. So up until this point, you're in your follicular phase, and then you start to produce that estrogenic cervical mucus. And then right around the time we have the big O, which is ovulation. And this is the main event. This is the main event, is ovulation. And just, I think this is really cool for women to know. When we are on birth control, obviously, it kind of puts us in a menopausal state where we're not necessarily ovulating. But here's why ovulation is so important. So ovulation is crucial for bone health. It's important for cognitive health. It's important for muscle repairment. It actually can make us stronger. It helps fight anxiety. It reduces inflammation. I mean, it is absolutely crucial to make sure that we ovulate, produce adequate amount of progesterone. And it's truly the main event for females. It's where we look our best, our hair, our skin, our body's like, let's put our best self out there. Let's try to reproduce. So it's a sign of truly fertility health and just overall health when we have a really nice, strong ovulation.
Okay, that was so helpful. I know you said you were going to simplify, but I feel like we actually got into a lot there. And every time I hear someone talk about cervical mucus, like passionately, I know that sounds kind of funny, but I'm sure you get it. It just really reinforces this idea that like tracking your cycle and tracking these things, it can be so empowering because not, you know, listen, if you have a healthy cycle and you're seeing these kinds of patterns every single cycle, month after month, it's great. I don't know that I would say it necessarily gets like boring or repetitive, but it is so helpful then when you start to see other things crop up, red flags, or like, oh, hey, you know what? Now I'm starting to notice and pay attention. I am going straight from having my period to having that mucus. And then my cycle is really short. I feel like I'm bleeding all the time. I know that so many women feel like something is off. And a lot of times they'll go into the doctor and their concerns will be dismissed, or they'll even sometimes get like a basic blood panel and they don't find anything wrong. So they're like, okay, I guess I'm fine. And having this kind of information and knowledge about all these things you could be checking day in, day out at home, month after month, it just gives you so much information about your overall health.
Yeah, it's a monthly report card. And it really is. And this information that I said is a lot, but it's actually when you, if you listen to this episode often, you'll go, oh gosh, that's right. That's what she said. It's the same thing that happens every month when we're healthy. And when it doesn't, you don't necessarily need to be able to articulate why, but you can say to somebody that does know why, I notice I actually always have cervical mucus. They're going to go, oh, that's low progesterone. Or I notice that my cycle is really short. Or I notice that I actually don't, I have really long cycles. Or in the last half, your luteal phase, that, you know, that I notice that I start to have cramping or bleeding. Your luteal phase is never going to be longer than 18 days. It's typically 12 to 16, but it is fixed. If it starts, if it's 18, you're pregnant. So it's one of those things where you can always rely on. It should be between 12 to 16 days, again, on average. And you notice, oh my gosh, if my period or if my cycle seems really short, you're again looking at things like low progesterone. So your luteal phase is really telling. This is where most women start to say like, oh my gosh, like I notice I feel like really bad cramps or gassy right before my period. I notice that I actually had a woman the other day at a discovery call and I thought it was so clever. She was like, my husband told me my cycle is 26 days. I was like, huh. I just have to know. So how did your husband say it was 26 days? She goes, oh, well, he was tracking my cycle. And I swear to God, this is a true story. She's like, he was tracking my cycle because he noticed that my mood swings changed so bad. And so he just wanted to be prepared. I was like, I need to tell people this. This is the funniest thing
ever. That's so funny.
I'm not the most creative guy. He's like, you know what? It's not her. I'm going to tell myself that. She's on day 26. It's her cycle. I'm like, that's funny.
That's so proactive. Good for him.
Good for him, right? I'm like, he loves you. And she was just giggling. She's like, I know. And it's so funny. She's like, but obviously she doesn't want to feel this way. And it's hard on their marriage when it's, you know, when you are having these big mood swings of really low or really high or really anger. It's all indicative of too much estrogen in the body, especially when we see it in that last half where hormones should be crashing. And going down, not crashing. They should be going down unless you're pregnant. And that's where if they're inappropriate and imbalanced, then we're going to start to see those symptoms like she was saying.
Yeah. Wait, I love that. That's so funny. It actually reminds me of when my husband and I were dating and I would be like, oh, I just got my period. He's like, yeah, well, I knew that that was coming. I'm like, how did you know? Cause I was really irregular back then. He's like, it's pretty obvious. You're like usually pretty even keeled and then you'll be extremely mad at me and not want to talk for 2 days. I'm like, oh, I've never noticed that. I guess that's like interesting from an outside perspective.
Yeah. Because you know, in your mind, when you're in that situation, you're like, I'm right. Like you do deserve to be mad.
Yeah, I was always right. No, 100% I was right. But like, it was really interesting to me that I was like, oh, he can tell. I guess that means it's significant. So let's get into a little bit more about why we're seeing this. And I'm sure you see so many women who are coming to you being like, hey, my period is really off. Something is up with my hormones. And I know before we started recording, we were talking a lot about just like, you know, people like to dive into these really nitty gritty pieces. But I want to back up because you mentioned a lot of it is just like these basic, simple, foundational things in our health that are kind of off these days. So what are some of the root causes that you see, you know, are affecting people's cycles and their periods?
Yeah, I'm glad that you said it that way because I really have been in this industry for quite a bit. And you know, I think that when I was first learning, it was really exciting to learn about all these things that can impact the period, and they can. And like I said, I do offer comprehensive testing, and I do believe in that. I think it can be helpful. But I truly, truly believe now that we are so quick to spend money on the testing and the supplements, and there's a reality check that we can do to ourselves and say, like, oh gosh, like, am I actually doing the foundations, which I'll explain in a second. Unless you're one of those people that are like, I just need somebody to teach me the foundations or hold me accountable, that's fair. But many of the women that I see are just not even fueling themselves well enough. And what I see is so many times that we are either have kids or we're young professionals, we are just go, go, go. And we don't really take the time to actually fuel ourselves well. And in that, I mean, not necessarily eating healthy, because the type of people that come to me, I'm kind of a last resort. They've seen all the doctors, or they just are, I need somebody to help me. And you look at their food and you're saying, oh gosh, like, I see you're eating healthy. You're doing a good job. Let me show you where you're not quite fueling yourself well. Is you're actually not eating enough. You need to get more protein in, more carbohydrates, more fat. And people have become so caught up in diet culture that even healing and health has become like a diet. And that's not the case. Like, we should be able to eat high quality, whole, nutrient dense foods, and enough of it to support our body's needs, meaning, a little nerdy here, total daily energy expenditure. So just you living and breathing, me living and breathing and living my life. And then in addition, stress to that, any stressors that we have, whether that's good stressors like working out, breastfeeding, or just our day-to-day emotional stressors, we have to account for that, because our body is burning those calories. And so when we're not actually fueling ourselves well, what can happen is that we have blood sugar dysregulation. This is almost how I always see it, is that I have a woman that comes to me, she has painful periods, and we go through her food log, and I say, all right, well, explain to me a little bit what's going on. Okay, well, I wake up, I get the kids ready, or I get ready for work, and then I'm doing X, Y, Z. Then I run out the door, I'll stop at Starbucks, or we'll have, you know, Sally Sue, who's really proactive about her health, and she'll say, I'll make myself a really quick, like, quick kale smoothie, and I'll eat it in the car on the way to work or while I'm dropping off the kids. And then, you know, I put my head down, I get work done, then maybe I do lunch. Typically lunch is maybe just grabbing a handful of X, Y, and Z. And then we always have a really great dinner with a protein, a carb, a good veggie. And then at night, like, maybe I'll grab a couple pieces of chocolate. And I'm like, oh gosh, like, we're not fueling ourselves well. And what happens is when we're under eating in that capacity, our body has to rely on things like our adrenaline and cortisol to bring back up blood sugar. So then we become in this state of blood sugar dysregulation, or our body's in this constant state of fight or flight. And if you put it in this terms of like, oh gosh, if I'm running from a bear, my body's not going to say, oh, I'm going to make sure I'm digesting my food. I'm going to make sure that my hormones are sufficient. I'm producing enough, you know, progesterone. I'm ovulating on time, fertility. The body feels safe enough to ovulate. No, it's going to be in a place where it is heightened fight or flight, relying on adrenaline, relying on cortisol. And when this happens in such an extended period of time, it's going to actually suppress the production of sex hormones, specifically testosterone. And it can lead to different mineral loss, which can lead to imbalances of estrogen, and it can impact insulin levels, again, playing a large role in our actual sex hormones as well. So when we're not properly fueling ourselves, whether or not we're eating actually healthy food becomes a bigger issue.
Yeah, I love the way that you like gave those examples, because I think that just resonates with a lot of the people I work with also. And I think for some people, even just the idea of prioritizing, like making time to sit down and eat as opposed to run and grab and go, really feels so countercultural these days. Do you have any tips for people who are, that's just their lifestyle, to even get into that place where they're like, okay, I'm carving out time to sit and chew my food and not just be like constantly running and eating and grabbing on the go?
Yeah. Okay. So a couple different options. So one is I actually start with bedtime routine. Because if we have a really good bedtime routine, then we're going to go to bed easier. We're going to be able to wake up easier. And I always say this for my moms out there, like, if you have kids and you know your kids require a bedtime, they require songs and a bath and the dim lights, they're not worried about a mortgage. They're not worried about relationships. Like, they don't have a job. So they're going to be, our body requires more. We require the calmness and the structure of a bedtime routine that tells our body, hey, it's time to calm down. That's, and we can go deeper into that, but just simple as, like, you know, blocking out blue light. You can put little cheap Home Depot orange lighting light bulbs in there, dim the lights, use real candles, start a simple routine. I do a magnesium bath almost every night and read my book, and that's it. So that's the first thing, because when we have a good nighttime routine, we're going to be able to wake up easier. The next thing is making sure that we actually set an alarm to eat within 30 minutes of waking. I would say a gentle alarm, like a do-do-do-do-do, not like, where you're like, oh, I gotta eat. But a gentle alarm that says, like, hey, it's time to make sure that I am eating a good protein, carb, and fat. And then the other thing that I will always say, I am a mom of young kids, so I will say that I often will say to my moms, like, hey, if you desire this for your kids to have this life where they're not just stuck in fight or flight like you are, you actually have to lead by example. And sometimes that's the only way I can get moms to be motivated, is by serving their family, which is sweet. But it's also like, gosh, like, we're in such like a rightfully so selfless stage of life. But there is some part of like demonstrating that we have to do, which is taking care of ourselves, which is, hey, we need to sit down. We need to eat as a family. Mommy, when she sits down, I tell my kids, like, hey, my three-year-old, if you drop your fork, go get the fork. Like, a mommy's sitting down to eat her meal now. I need to calm down. And we eat together as a family. And, you know, but this is a priority. Mommy has got your food. We get all set. And then we sit together. So you're leading by example of how to implement your health. So if that motivates you, which sometimes it does for moms, it's like, it's hard for me to do it myself, but I do want my kids to live this way. So, you know, there's that. But it's to really make sure that we're putting in these gentle alarms, eating within the first 30 minutes of waking. And then the other thing is, like, having an idea. I know it's really hard to think about adding in one more thing, but oftentimes if we aren't preparing, you know, and thinking ahead of time, then we are going to fail. And so taking a 10 minutes, you know, on a Sunday to really be prepared of what you kind of want your meals to look like, check in with your pantry, your fridge. This is something that we do every single Sunday. And sometimes I don't want all of the emotional burden. I'll tell my husband, hey, can you think of Tuesdays and Wednesdays? I'll get, you know, Monday and Fridays or whatever. And we split the dinner ideas up so that it's not on me to think about it. But we prep ahead of time to make sure that we have everything in our fridge and our pantry, and then the meals lightly planned out, always dinner, not always breakfast. We just kind of make sure we have enough food there. And that also sets us up. And those are little things. But when we have a pantry that's stocked, when we have an idea of what we're eating, it takes the emotional burden off of us and gives us a plan on eating, which we know at the end of the day has a huge significant on our hormones.
I love that. I think that's such a helpful, practical tip. Something that I find myself using a lot as a metaphor when I feel overwhelmed is, I feel like a computer where there's like 30 tabs open, and, you know, your computer starts to slow down and, like, sometimes just fritz and doesn't even work anymore. So sometimes I get to that point, and I find, like, that kind of taking 10 minutes on a Sunday to plan things out for the week, not being afraid to say, like, hey, I am allowed to delegate and put, you know, some of those decisions on my partner. Because for some people, that really is the hardest part when it comes to, you know, just making the decisions around what to eat. And it's funny, also something I really resonate with what you said is just like kind of training your kids. Mommy's also allowed to sit. And, you know, when you drop a napkin or a fork, again, obviously this is going to depend on your kids' ages, but once they're like 1.5, they can probably get it themselves. And I know I have a lot of clients who come to me, they're struggling with infertility. They go through this whole journey with nutrition, and then they get to the point where they're like, wow, nutrition's so amazing. It's so powerful. Now I have to navigate this with my kids. And it's so hard because there's so much candy and there's so much junk and there's all this stuff out there. How do you, like, keep, you know, how do you apply this stuff with your kids? I'm like, the biggest thing I probably put an emphasis on is, like, family dinner. We sit down for meals. Like, we really try to bring back that sacredness that I feel like maybe, I don't know, 50 years ago, family dinner used to be such a big deal and a non-negotiable for most families. And now, I don't know, I feel everyone's busy, the after school schedules, and everyone's running around and it's so hectic. Like, I say that's where I put in most of my effort, as opposed to, like, I don't talk to my kids my 4-year-old and my 2-year-old about blood sugar balance and what's happening with insulin resistance. Like, we don't do that. They're kids, but we do make family dinner a priority, and it's good for them and it's good for me.
One thing we do in our house is my kids do know what a protein and carb is, because they have to grab a protein with their carb, because it is it just like us, it does impact behavior. So that is one thing that, similar to you, a dinner, I think it's such an important thing. I love that, because again, it's, I mean, for so many components, it helps reset the nervous system. It matters to invest, you know, health is not just all about what you can and cannot control and being as strict as possible or being perfect. It's about relationship. It's about endurance. Health is a journey. It's not grit your teeth and go. So when you can have fun and enjoy and make healthy choices and be around your loved ones, that's perfect. But that is one thing that we do. We do make sure that everybody in our family knows what a protein and a carb is. My three-year-old can tell anybody.
I love that.
Protein, and we have protein buckets. So whether that's just chopsticks or protein bars, they know they have to grab that before they can grab, like, you know, maybe some gluten-free pretzels or something. But one thing too, I was just thinking about that we often do to make things really easy is we are not creative in our household. We are not at all. We have Taco Tuesdays. We have like Meatloaf Mondays. And so we have very consistent meals, like slow cook meals, sheet pan meals, tacos, and some kind of like, like I said, like a meatloaf. I'm from Chicago, so we do. But what we do is we always look at what protein sources or veggies we have to switch. So therefore, if we're looking at for the meat ahead, Taco Tuesday may be shrimp, it may be chicken, it may be beef, it may be ancestral blend, it may be beef. Meatloaf may be ancestral blend, it may be bison, it may be beef. So we're not necessarily being all this new creative with like the types of meals that we're eating, but we are being incredibly intentional with the protein sources and the veggie sources. Oh, last week we did salmon, and we did my husband's from Louisiana, so we'll do a lot of like oyster dishes. We did like a gumbo. So this week we can save money on the seafood. We'll just do an ancestral blend and a chicken. And then like maybe a beef again or a chicken repeated because it's less expensive. So just for, you know, future when we are talking about like looking at your meals ahead too, you do not have to be creative, but you can be very intentional with your protein and veggie sources.
I love that. I think also sometimes we have this idea that it's going to be overly complicated. I know I always tell my clients this for some reason, even still when I think about meal prep, the picture that comes up in my head is this picture from Pinterest of like a million different, you know, beautiful glass containers. And it looks like the rainbow, and the refrigerator is like a brand new sterling silver refrigerator. I'm like, that's not what my fridge has ever looked like. And it doesn't need to. It doesn't have to be this like fancy, complicated gourmet thing. It can be simple. And in fact, it's probably going to be better when it's simple, because that's really sustainable. That's something you can stick with and commit to for months and years.
Totally.
I want to switch gears a little bit and talk a little bit more about some of the details when it comes to our hormone health, our period health. I know that one thing that you talk about a lot that I don't see enough people talking about is iron and the role of, you know, iron dysregulation, how that's affecting our hormones. And I would love if we could get into a little bit of that, because I think that's going to be something that a lot of my audience hasn't heard a lot about.
Yeah. So I dove deeper into iron and iron dysregulation probably like 6 years ago now, when I had first heard about not supplementing with vitamin D. And up until this point, everything was about supplementing with vitamin D. And that's all my training was. And then I was like, gosh, that seems really wrong. And so anytime you look at science or, you know, anything, hopefully you figure out why is that wrong? I want to look at why that's wrong. But I was actually proven wrong. I deeply believe that we shouldn't be blinding vitamin D. And in the process, learned why it was connected to iron and minerals. And so for the last 6 years, it's been one of the biggest things that have changed my practice, is understanding that when there is any type of iron dysregulation, which I'll talk about in a second, that it can have a very large influence on our hormones, on inflammation, autoimmune condition. And by addressing it alone, I've had people that struggled with infertility get pregnant. I've had people that have had Sjogren's, Hashimoto's, lupus, all go into remission because we've addressed the iron component. So, not every single person that has an issue, but there is a lot of people that struggle with these issues where it is actually uniquely tied to iron. So I like to talk about iron and in such a way of a nightclub. And so if we are looking at a nightclub, we are thinking about that there's a door for opening and a door for closing. And these nightclub doors are run by bouncers, and the bouncers are copper. And we have, you know, copper is a mineral, and it lets iron into the cell, out of the cell, into the cell, out of the cell, into the nightclub, out of the nightclub. And then we have this, the managers, and the managers are run by vitamin A, not vitamin A beta carotene, but vitamin A retinol. And so often what happens is that we will consume, this is for people that have iron overload, a lot of iron in our diet. And if you look in the back of cereals and breads and pastas, everything is iron fortified, fortified with iron, fortified with iron. And there's a very much skewed study that years and years and years ago, where they had done a one study and just completely took it off, and every single person needs it, where women in their third trimester were low in iron. And then they said, well, let's just combat that by fortifying iron into our foods. Well, women are often low in iron in their third trimester because it's where the baby absorbs and utilizes it for its own. So that's actually not that uncommon. But anyway, that's where that originated from. But if we're eating meats and proteins and animal proteins, we're likely getting enough of the dietary need, which is not much, in our diet. So when we have these iron fortified foods, we're getting an abundance of iron. So this is where we start to see iron accumulation in the body. And it can be accumulated within the liver, in the immune system, in so the macrophages, and the gut, feeding things like parasites and dysbiosis, fungus, candida, and elsewhere. Anytime there's damaged tissue, iron can be accumulated in there. And so we have this nightclub, and we have all this iron fortified foods, and we're consuming it, but we don't necessarily have the staff. We don't necessarily have the bouncers. Some people don't have enough bouncers, and some people don't have enough managers, which is copper and retinol. So what happens is iron, we're getting all this iron accumulation in the nightclub, and then we don't really have enough staff. So there's not enough copper to open and close the door, which is running things like ferrooxidase and ceruloplasm that basically make iron move appropriately throughout the body. And so there just some people just don't have enough copper, and we'll talk about why in a second. And then other people just don't have enough managers as well. And so they don't have enough retinol. So the iron's just accumulating, and they just don't have enough staff. Other people we see, they actually don't have a ton of iron. In fact, it can look like low because it is accumulated elsewhere. People with high ferritin is where we see a ton of iron overload, or we'll have it accumulate within the liver. This is where we can see people with like high cholesterol, low thyroid conversion, major heavy periods, cramps and pain, but short period bleeds, short period bleed days. So less than 3 days, less than four, and then major cramps. Liver, iron can accumulate in the liver. And some people will have, so this iron dysregulation where they have, some people have enough bouncers. They have bouncers everywhere. They have copper toxicity, but it's not actually copper toxicity, because when you run a blood test and you see they don't have enough retinol, you go, oh my gosh, the staff is just chit-chatting. They're just not doing their job. That's what's happening. And it's because there's not enough retinol saying, guys, copper, go open up the club. Go open up the club and let the iron lead the club as well. Move appropriately within the body. And so it is either that they don't have enough staff, or they'd have too much staff but not enough managers. So that's where we call the cofactors, especially copper, ceruloplasm, magnesium. Those are the big main players moving iron. And you start to see people like, oh, you're not getting enough copper in your diet. You have poor liver health. You have, quote, liver congestion. So that's where we break down retinol. So you're not actually getting enough of the staff members because you have poor liver health. With all of these examples, we have iron that accumulates elsewhere within the body. But the other thing is, and not to make it overcomplicated, but especially with these women that are being diagnosed low estrogen, and that's not to say that nobody can, but a large majority of the women that I see are diagnosed, even on a Dutch test, low estrogen, and they're not low estrogen. They have iron accumulation, but they're low copper. And when they're low copper, they don't have enough of the mineral to move iron appropriately. So then estrogen, who it can operate as an antioxidant, will go to the sites of inflammation that iron has caused, accumulate within the tissues. And then we have these all painful periods and breast tenderness and cramping. And it's actually just like, gosh, my period was only 2 days. That's crazy. That's exactly tied to iron dysregulation.
Wow. First of all, that was the metaphors and just the way you explained it was so, so helpful. And I really feel like no one's talking about this. No one's testing for it. When there is that kind of stagnation in the body, where do you even suggest people begin? Is it like trying to eliminate, you know, their intake of iron fortified foods? Is it, you know, helping support liver detoxification or lymphatic drainage? Like, where do we even start with, you know, all of these like mineral imbalances in the body?
Yeah. So I would say the most simple things are, yes, absolutely limiting iron fortified foods, paying attention, how much iron is fortified in there. And then also things like, are you supporting your liver health? So trying to keep this simple, like dandelion tea, blood sugar. We talked about blood sugar. One thing we didn't necessarily say was that liver is part of blood sugar. So anytime there's lots of low blood sugar, high blood sugar, it's going to play a role and put stress on the liver. So you want good liver health. So in order to have good liver health, you have to have limit your toxins, limit your zeonoestrogens, have good blood sugar, eat high quality foods and high quality saturated fats, and focus on food. Now, you know, if you're really struggling, my suggestion is going to be, this is where testing can be helpful. Because when we look at things like your minerals, we can say, oh gosh, you are low. We can see cobalt's really high, meaning liver congestion. We got to come in. That would make sense. That we need to do a little bit of cod liver oil. We need to do a little bit of copper support, which we usually use from like B vitamins, organ meats, things like that. Oysters, shellfish. And other things are going to be like even a blood panel. You can actually run copper. You can run ceruloplasmin. You can run magnesium RBC, not magnesium serum. You can run retinol and have a good understanding of more of a deeper picture. Like, oh, my iron has always been fine, but I see here I'm actually super, super low in copper. I'm super, super low in retinol. And that's going to give me an indication of why I'm struggling with these period issues, why I'm struggling with fertility, why I'm struggling with, I mean, what part of the reason I was into iron health, thankfully, before I had two miscarriages. But when I did have two miscarriages, I finally went and was like, well, this is because I got so easily pregnant with my firstborn. When it was time to get pregnant for my second, I had this typical secondary infertility. And that's where I had the two miscarriages, took a year and a half to get pregnant. And so I was like, gosh, like this is, I want to get bloods. I want to be active. I want to figure out what's going on. And I saw my iron serum was a little high, but I was so low in copper and ceruloplasmin for many, many reasons. Part of it was emotional stress. Part of it was that I lived in blood, I lived in mold. I didn't live in blood. The other part of it was like, you know, just personal stuff. We were helping a family member that was an addict, you know, just get sober. So it was a lot of emotional stressors that was burning through my minerals. But then also I had a parasite feeding off of the iron. You know, I had to work on mucosal lining support, so I was able to absorb and utilize all the nutrients that I was consuming. So you know, it when we really understand that puzzle piece, or when you start to take a look at it, maybe you don't have to understand it, but it can be, you know, a huge component to a lot of people that have been struggling for a long time. You know, the reason why.
Wow. Yeah, I think that's it, again, it's really about like starting to look at the root causes. And not kind of just make like blanket guesses or, you know, kind of apply this like general idea of health. And I know going back to you said like a lot of people will typically come to you and say, you know, when I eat a healthy dinner, like I have a protein and a veggie and a starch, but like really getting into this and figuring out what's going on there is so helpful. And I know you just mentioned you did struggle with miscarriages, and this is something that you're really open about, which I think is so important. Just, you know, so many women struggle with miscarriage and with loss. And you talk a lot about healing through that, both on like a physiological level and what you did to support your body, but also the emotional piece around that. And if you're open to sharing, I would love to hear you talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I know so many women that have struggled with miscarriages, and I felt a lot of shame when I had mine because I'm like, I'm a practitioner. I should know better. Like this shouldn't happen to me. And it was really hard to come forward with, because I even had people on social media, you know, having a presence can be hard because someone was like, clearly you're not that good at your job if you're having miscarriages. And
oh,
I'm like,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. Oh, it was, I've had horrible stuff, you know, a lot of amazing, but there, you know, if you're on social media, people will say stuff. And so it was really hard to come forward. And I just realized, like, actually, like, this is, it's just like, nobody is perfect in their health. And this is what has really helped me develop an understanding and just a maturity of health in my practice, is that I used to be so into, like, all the nitty gritty. And now I'm like, health is a journey, and it is a journey for every single person. And that's either mental health or it's just physical health and healing. There's always trials and tribulations. And so in my personal journey of miscarriage, I've learned that in order to really achieve the health that I sought out to do, I had to do a couple of things. I'm going to talk about the emotional side first. Was one, I didn't know how to have fun, which sounds really, like, silly, but, like, I didn't. I would say I'm a bubbly person, but I'm also very serious. I am very hardworking, type A, go-getter. And so it took me a while, especially when I was, like, trying to deal with my health. I was like, how do I have fun? Like, what does that look like anymore? What brings me joy beyond just, like, trying to learn more and grow my business? Like, how do I do all that? And so I had to, like, dabble into what that looked like. I tried a bunch of different things that didn't bring me joy, and it wasn't very fun. And then I tried, like, things like tennis, and I was like, oh, wait, no, this is fun. So I actually had to fail and try different things. But scheduling in fun on a regular basis is now something that I implement with my clients and with myself, is that, like, on a regular basis, Meg has to do something for fun. And for some people, that's really easy. But for somebody like me, it was really difficult. And the other thing was rest. Like, I really had to start to schedule in an actual rest day that was intentional towards replenishing my health. Faith was important to me. So it kind of looked like more like a Sabbath, where we weren't really watching TV. We were spending time in nature. We were calming down. We were reading books. We had a plan. And I actually have a small, like, 5-episode podcast where I talk about this, because it's so hard to talk about it in just one little short thing, because rest is, like, very difficult when you're in relationships and have kids. It's a trial and error. It's a lot of expectation communication of, like, I pictured rest like this and you pictured rest like this. So we wrestled through it as a family, but now it is something that we do every single month. And they know, hey, it's the Langstons. That's their rest day. That's what they do. And it is replenishing to not only my marriage, to my kids, to myself. And my body reaps a huge benefit for that. So rest, fun. And then I would schedule in things like meal planning and making sure I'm on top of the things like that. So that is something that's, like, really, really important to me. I actually have a women's conference September 27th that is birthed from just my miscarriage story and just all of the ways that I had to walk through my faith and implement these things. So that was the big part. And then, more practically speaking, from a health practitioner, it was looking for the iron piece of it. That was a huge piece. I was avoiding testing because I just wanted to get pregnant. I didn't want to, my heart did not want to stop and do a protocol. And I was like, there's no way. I actually felt fine symptom wise. I had a really healthy period. It was 28 days. It came and went. I didn't have symptoms. I would say the only symptom I had was melasma, which is a big iron dysregulation, like, kind of spotlight, like red flashing red line. You have iron dysregulation. But other than that, I was like, there's no way I can have this much going on. I feel really good. And so I don't want to take a test. I don't want to do a protocol, but I did. And I had H. pylori, I had a parasite, I had dysbiosis, iron was feeding in. It was from iron accumulation, but I had to go through that. And then, you know, and then again, putting a little bit more structure towards that, looking into progesterone. Did I want to take topical progesterone? Did I want to work on things like liver health to support progesterone production? Making sure I'm eating enough, all of those things, which, again, is crucial for progesterone, because my miscarriages were due to low progesterone. That was my heightened focus. I did things like aspirin. I'm a huge component of aspirin. Aspirin is one of my biggest things that I will put on every single woman that's struggling with fertility, that is struggling with miscarriages. It's aspirin. I love GeriCare, 325 milligrams. I'm not afraid to do short periods. There's so much misinformation about aspirin. It's anti-inflammatory. It's supportive for cellular health. It's unreal. And so that was another practical thing that I did, not only for my progesterone, but also for any oxidative stress or inflammation in the body.
Thank you so much for sharing all of that. First of all, there's so much that I actually related to in your journey, but I'm, like, still a little bit hung up even on the fact that you got a comment like that of, oh, you know, you're the practitioner, you should be able to do it perfectly. I'm sure, you know, I can't imagine, like, what someone must have wrong with them and in their own life to send you a message like that. But I'm sure there were literally thousands of people who were like, oh my gosh, this could even happen to her. And she seems to do everything perfectly. And she has a normal period. And like, it makes people feel so much less alone and feel like, you know, it's not about being perfect. Like, this is something that so many women struggle with. But it's really interesting to me that when you talk about that process of healing, bringing in fun and rest were such critical pieces for you. And I think actually a lot of my listeners, I know a lot of my listeners fall into that similar, like very ambitious, very type A category. In some ways, they might find it easier to do something like a nutrition protocol and meal prep than to find what truly nourishes their soul and brings them fun and helps them rest. And I've definitely related to that, especially since I had kids, running my own business, which are things I love and I'm so passionate about. But then like finding it for me, separate from being a mom, separate from the passion in my work, like how do I fill up my own cup truly in that way? And it sounds so weird to be like, it's kind of hard. It's hard to figure that out. It's hard to make the time for it, but it, for some people, it really is. And I love that you shared that. I love that you shared how faith was such a part of it. I think it's really, it's so helpful for people to hear you share both the practical piece, but especially that emotional piece of your journey.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah. It's, yeah, it truly has been, I didn't want it to happen, but it's been really monumental on how I view just health and the journey. And I talk about endurance a lot and enduring well. So when we think about enduring and health, we think of like grit and grr. But when we think about like, oh, well, actually, no, like to endure well is to be strategic. It's to be understanding of when to start, when to go. It's actually really loving because it's intentional. And so that's now how I've just truly transformed and changed everything in my practice in such a way of like, we're not going gritting our teeth and grinding and this is health and I need to heal because I have, you know, Hashimoto's or because I have infertility issues or because I have, you know, eczema. Like, no, that's actually not going to get us there because it's not going to just be the test and the supplement. It's going to be the nutrition. It's going to be the fun. It's going to be all of the things holistically that are a lot of boring things consistently that it takes to do to really heal.
Yeah. And I know you mentioned before, a lot of what you like to focus on is not necessarily like the hot, trendy things in health right now, but going back to the basics. And you talked about just nourishing yourself properly. You talked about having a bedtime routine, which I'm such a fan of. My audience knows, like, I am very into just having good boundaries with your phone, shutting it off and putting it in a different room. I think it's like something that everyone can do. It's free. It takes literally 2 seconds, but like, nobody does it and it can change your life. And when people actually get rid of their phone at like 8:30, 9 o'clock, they're like, oh, Lauren, you're right. It really makes a difference. Are there any things I want to ask about like with stress management? And maybe the fun and rest comes into play there, but I think that's something that I see so many people struggling with. And I wonder if you have any things that you personally do for stress management that your clients do that can be helpful for our listeners.
Yeah, I think I love that you said that it's free because I say that all the time. Like, yes, there are things that we do that we charge for and that we walk people through and as practitioners, and we have like all these different things that you can spend money on. But I'm telling you, the most effective things that you will do are free. And so it's my biggest thing is outside, getting outside as much as possible. There's no such thing as bad weather, only bad clothes. There's a book about that. I actually read it when my kids were little. When my oldest, who's almost 7, was a baby, because I was really interested in like learning about how other, you know, countries parented. And I think was it Switzerland? It may have been, but it was I think it was the Swiss moms, and they had their babies sleep in carriages and outside. And the book was all about there's no such thing as bad weather, only bad clothes. But I actually took that in of like, yes, but also for us too. So if you are in the middle of Wisconsin and it's February, you can still go outside. You may only get 10 minutes, but you being able to dress and stay outside and get sunlight into your eye, it's going to help with cortisol production and melatonin production, making sure that the circadian rhythm is in a natural state as it should be, whether it should be high or low. The other thing is it's actually going to be really good for thyroid conversions. That sunlight, even if it's cloudy, actually helps with thyroid conversions. It's going to be helpful for resetting the nervous system. It's going to be helpful for your immune system. It's going to be helpful for your cardiovascular system. And in return, because of all of that, that is all going to be helpful for your hormones and just your mental state. I always say this to my husband when we like go for a family walk. Typically, I have a backyard. If anybody follows me on social media, they know like I have two French doors. I always keep them open. And I do freak out a little bit about shoes in the carpet because I'm old. But other than that, we're all in and out all day long. And it's just like that is like my favorite thing to do. But when every once in a while when we actually go for a family walk, which it sounds more dreamy than it actually we get to do. We don't get to do it as much. But living outside, we do. But when we do get to go do a family walk, I'll always say to my husband, like, I feel like this resets. Like, there's nothing more that can reset than going outside and, like, being with, like, a family member. Or I honestly don't even think listening to anything. It's just sitting outside, listening to nature. There's no greater reset. And, again, there's no such thing as bad weather, only bad clothes. So if it's really, really cold, even if you can go 10 minutes, but you're in a really – you dress yourself really warm in the middle of winter, it's going to give you all of those benefits and more because you're doing it consistently.
I love that. It's such an accessible tip. And I remember I was reading something about this. I don't remember the exact numbers, but they were, like, talking about the actual measurement of light particles outside. And they were saying, like, even on the – cloudiest, most thunderstormy day, you have so many more light particles coming into your eyes than if you're sitting in a bright, well-lit room that's inside. And there's all these different pieces to it, like, you don't think about, and it sounds way too simple to be helpful, but like the way that those light photons come into your eyes and the way that your pupils are able to like focus narrowly versus taking a wider view. And that sends your whole body a message that like things are good, things are calm. Literally just going outside does so much. And it doesn't take that much effort.
Yes. No, totally. I think the same thing. It feels like, oh my gosh, there's so much more going on to the world. Like, I'm okay. We're going to figure it out. Things always have a way of working itself out. Even if that's just that I'm so overwhelmed because the laundry never ends, or I'm, you know, just like getting ready to launch something that feels scary to me, you know, whatever the case may be. I have a 3-year-old that, you know, has been hard to discipline lately, whatever it is. Like when you step outside, you go, oh, okay. Like I'm okay. It's okay. Everything's fine. And it has this ability, like you said, to just reset. There's things that are much bigger, you know, than our current just hyper-focused little life that just kind of calms you down a little bit.
Totally. It literally gets you to change your perspective. And I think that's so powerful. Meg, this was so informative. Thank you so much. Can you tell everyone where they can find you, follow you on social media, learn more about your programs, all the good stuff?
Yes. Well, thank you so much for having me. Okay. So you can follow me on Instagram. I'm only on Instagram. But Meg_Langston, LANGSTON. So Meg_Langston. And you can follow me there. And if you're interested in what it looks like to work with us, we do take clients one-on-one. And we also have a group program called Fix Your Period that's all designed on a little bit of education and how to truly fix your period in a group program, and is absolutely amazing. We've done this now for many, many times, helped hundreds of women, and it's probably one of my favorite things because I like to geek out in periods. So other than that, I have some cool adventures and things that are coming up in this year. So if you're interested in following along to the story and the things that I'm doing, you can find me on Instagram.
Okay, amazing. This was so great. Meg, thank you so, so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the About Health and Hormones podcast. If you loved today's episode, I would love to know. Please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so I can make this podcast even better for you all. I would love to connect with you. Follow me on Instagram at Lauren Allen Nutrition or head to my website, www.laurenallennutrition.com. to learn about my coaching programs and stay up to date on all of my latest workshops and courses. I am so glad you are here today, and I wish you all health and happiness.